edition of this book, that section from the PFMA, and for this kind of thing, and we need just to understand. And we know you might be having now putting in place some strategic plans and to avoid these kind of things. But what was this before you come out these kind of things before yourself? And also the last one is that one of. Of course, this is the contravention of the supply chain management policy in terms of the PFM. Also, if you have put now the strategic planning in place, then it would be good for us. But how sure are we that this kind of thing will not happen again? Because maybe some other policies were not in place. Chairperson, your patience. Thank you very much.
I think it will be small in Ghana, Eddie, but now I see it's three questions. Chairperson of the board?
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I have noted down all the questions, and I will allocate them to the various team members. But also, Chairperson, I'd like it to be interactive where if perhaps the CEO wants to add to what the CFO has said, we can be allowed to do that, because I would like us to answer the questions as comprehensively as possible. Thank you, Chair. On the first, the comment around the use of acronyms, we apologize for that, and I think in future we will make sure that in our annual report we have a page that explains all the acronyms. Because yes, it does happen that people take it for granted that you understand what SPE means, etc., etc. So we will make sure that that is taken care of. The second question was around downtown and a previous CEO and CEO of downtown. I think I will ask our DG to handle downtown in a way that it will explain to members what it is that we were purchasing, why we did that, etc. And then the advisory panel question will be handled by Dominic Sorbet, because he chairs one of the advisory panels. Grant management system, our grant manager, Judy DiPopa, will handle that. And then around the question of why the discrepancy in housing with NKTZN, she will also handle. So can we handle those first, Chair? Thank you. Gigi, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Downtown Studios, I think there are several difficulties with Downtown Studios. The first one is that the initiative, as the presentation by the acting CEO of the NEC correctly says, the initiative for the purchase of Downtown Studios was an initiative from the department, which requested the NEC to purchase on its behalf Downtown Studios. The reason for that is a simple one. In fact, there are two reasons for that. One is that Downtown Studios is very much embedded in the music heritage of South Africa. Most of the leading South African as well as international artists that have recorded in the country have recorded through Downtown Studios. It has played a critical role in the development of music in the country, from Mawadela Queens and to Johnny Clegg, and I mean right through the music heritage of the country, and we could talk quite a bit about that. So it's a strategic heritage asset for the country, which has always been held by the private sector. But secondly, was to make recording of music more accessible to artists who otherwise could not record their music because of the high cost associated with recording. There is always also the relationship between artists and recording companies is a difficult one. It's a very exploitative one, and there is a whole range of problems in relation to that. Now, the minister at that time, not so much to get government into the business of recording, but to acquire this asset and hand it over to the music industry for the use of the music industry, for the good of the music industry. The way to do that was, and what the minister at that time decided, the department decided to request the NAC to do that. Now, there were two problems with that particular transaction. The first problem was that the SPE, the special purpose entity, was not immediately formed, because as I understand it, the intention was to acquire the asset and immediately transfer it to a special purpose entity, which would be representative of the music industry, so that the Downtown Studios is used for the benefit of the music industry. That, for whatever reason, did not happen immediately, and as a result, Downtown Studios has been held by the LAC, whose role in the whole thing was really supposed to be a contract, nothing else more than that. Secondly, was that if we acquire an entity as government or any of state institutions, we are supposed to seek the permission of the Minister of Finance in terms of Section 54 of the PFMA, if I'm not mistaken. That did not happen. Now, that is the problem with Downtown Studios. And the difficulty that it has now created for the NAC is, how do you account for the assets of Downtown Studios, of Downtown Music Hub, because that's another difficulty. Downtown Studios comprises of a number of things. There is, it's the Downtown Music Hub, which has the part of it is Fox Street Properties, which is a building, it's a property, and the other part of it is a business, which is a recording studio. But the CEO can speak about that. Now, how do we think this matter can be resolved, and what are we doing to resolve it? Chair, there are several things which we are doing. One is that we are approaching the Minister of Finance requesting condemnation for that non-compliance with the PFMA. Maybe before I get there, let me explain a bit of a technicality. The Cultural Promotions Act, which is a law which is administered by the department, allows the minister to use any of our entities to acquire assets for the purposes of promoting the arts. That was the law that was actually used in the acquisition of Downtown Studios. Now, the difficulty, though, is that you are creating, there is a bit of a conflict between the PFMA, which makes that decision a decision of the Minister of Finance, and the Cultural Promotions Act, which makes that decision a decision of the Minister of Arts and Culture. Now, the view that has been taken by the Auditor General is that the PFMA prevails over any other act in instances of conflict. And really that is the basis of the difficulty that we find ourselves in, and that we have put the NAC in. Now, what we're doing is that we are seeking condemnation from the Minister of Finance. What that condemnation would do, it does two things. One is that it allows the NAC to, in the meantime, to have and to legally hold the asset. But secondly, it would allow us to then transfer that asset legally as a lawfully held asset. The second part of what we're doing is to find ways of transferring that asset to the music industry. The SPE has been formed for Downtown Studios. We are working with the special purpose entity to ensure that it is representative of the music industry, to ensure that there are no conflicts between the interest of government as well as the interest of individuals that might sit in the boards of that entity, and to ensure that it is used for the general good of the music industry and does not transfer that to a special to the special purpose entity as it was originally intended. Chair, one of the things that we are in discussions with the SPE on is then how do we best utilize this. Part of what we will have to do one way or the other is we will have to find money to help the downtown to recapitalize itself. Downtown has got studios, some of which are not being used because the equipment has become obsolete. And we've got to recapitalize that. We've got to purchase new equipment. We've got to put it in a position where it is able to play its role firstly, but secondly, that it is able to generate an income which sustains it. The view that we hold as a department is that downtown is a development project. It cannot be a commercial vehicle. We want to keep it as a development project. However, we want to put it in a situation where it does not have to depend on government for funding, in the long term. That it is able to generate its income, plow its proceeds back to its work, and is able to sustain itself. That is what we are doing with Downtown Studios, Jay. Brooklyn and Chola, I don't know if you want to add.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think I'm not going to contradict the DG because he actually has said a mouthful, but just to take you back a little bit as to why was downtown established. The key objective of establishing downtown was to create access to the emerging music industry as a whole. And the notion of downtown studios is much more a holistic project. That's why we call it the hub. I think the other question was put, where is downtown? Downtown is in Hoed Streets. This is where the history of contemporary South African music was manufactured. It's a heritage site. And I think what has happened up till today is the revival of this center to become a center of excellence, because South Africa as a music producing country has to be on par with the world. It is not a venture that's elitist. It supports indigenous music, Maskande, Chikombela, jazz, choirs. So this is a national asset, and the point is to make it viable so that it does not drain fiscal resources. It's very important that we empower the industry to stand on, you know, on its feet, and I think that decision was a correct one. But also I want to say to the honorable members, it is deeply regrettable that there was this, you know, audit. It was unintentional, and I'm not going to make, you know, excuses, because we had Minister Phalojola and come and go and came in, Minister Lulu Tsengwana and now Minister Paul Mashati. But where we are with the NAC, we have a plan in place. Let us have condonation, are prepared. The process of transfer is in place, as DG has said, and we've put ourselves a timeline to say by the end of January, the story of the transfer or the issues around the transfer shall be resolved. Next year when we come here, we're going to be reporting about the success of this entity to say how is it contributing to music development. I would ask Chief Executive Mrs. Chola Mohammed just to give you a very brief, you know, synopsis as to where are we in terms of this
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, I will try not to duplicate a lot of what has been said both by the DG and Mr. Masukwane, but just to go back to the transaction and when it happened. Those of you who know the history of South African music will know that Gallo Records was the only true indigenous recording label. Indigenous is a South African recording label. And if you're following what has been happening over the last few years, know that Gallo has officially gone to its gravesite and is awaiting burial. Now, the DAC took a bold move in that they realized the potential of this asset, which Gallo held, the historic nature of the asset and the value of that asset, and they took the decision to purchase it. You've all heard about the complications that arose with regards to the purchase, et cetera, and you know we're looking to fixing that. But essentially what was purchased from Gallo was the asset, the fixed asset, which is the building situated in Johannesburg, and the business of the recording studios, which Gallo ran for a very long time. You know that the music recording business is essentially controlled by the four or five majors, all of which are international companies, and all of which have essentially let go of the recording facility as a business because it's not viable in terms of their business. Now, you ask, why would the DAC then purchase this if it's becoming obsolete? The UK is 15 years behind the United States in terms of the music industry. We are then 15 years behind the UK. In effect, we're 30 years behind, some would argue 60 years behind, in terms of what's required to be done for the music industry, and we need to cater for our market that needs access to these facilities. So it was one of the major reasons for purchasing it. Also for unearthing talent and really to keep a historic site that would have been for property developers who are going to put up apartment buildings and a building that we really need to keep for historic purposes. At the time of the transaction, there were two separate legal processes that took place. There was the agreement between Avusa, who controlled Gallo, and the NAC, dealing with the transfer of the business, the transfer of the assets, which includes the transfer of employees, and there was an agreement between the National Arts Council and the DAC in terms of what was going to happen with regards to the purchasing of the assets and then the establishment of the SPV. SPV being the special purpose vehicle, which is envisioned to which the transfer would take place. Now, as has been explained, this establishment of the SPV did not take place. There were changes in administration which caused severe delays and prejudiced the NAC, and they sat with this asset for a very long time. What we have with the assets, which is the fixed asset I think everyone is referring to, the fixed property, was an asset that was purchased for about 4 million, and if you look in the books now, the asset is appreciated to the value of about 10 million rand. It was an asset which is appreciating in value as the years go by, so it wasn't the dead purchase. Now, that building has five stories. One story has underground parking, secure parking, which is important for our clients because we're situated in downtown Johannesburg, and that there's some perception issues about safety, et cetera, et cetera. But you'll also know that there's a massive gentrification process going on in the city of Johannesburg in and around that area with the banks, Arsenal Main down the road, Fashion District down the road. So there is a lot of activity happening to, you know, gentrify that area. We've got one floor, which was administrative space, but we have now moved that up to another floor, and that space is used to lease out to some music groups for letting out equipment, et cetera, and we have a mixing and mastering facilities on that floor. We've got another floor in which we have tenants. Now, these tenants are music industry organizations or music industry individuals that occupy those spaces. We've got in the region of about 30 tenants, but usually between 20 and 30 at a time. We've got another floor, which is the recording studio. We have three recording studios. Now, for the period of the last 3 or 4 years, we've only had one functioning recording studio because we're not able to recapitalize and utilize it to its full capacity. We've managed, with some of the funding that we've received, to recapitalize one of the studios to a certain extent, but it's very limited, and that is now functioning with effect from the 1st of November, and we've got another studio which is not working because the equipment has become obsolete. We've got another floor which comprises of rehearsal rooms. Now, there are no facilities like that in Joburg, and you understand the requirements for rehearsal rooms in terms of the live circuit, the live performance circuit. You need those facilities to rehearse for your shows, et cetera, et cetera. And we have those facilities. We've got about 12 or 13 rehearsal rooms in varying sizes, which artists are using. Stimela still rehearses there for their shows. Most recently, Zahara is rehearsing there for their shows. So they are prominent artists still utilizing the facilities, both from a rehearsal space and from a recording space. And then the other floor that we have is obviously the administration space. Now, in terms of the transfer, there were four employees that were employed by Abusa / Gelo / Downtown Studios that were transferred to the NAC as part of the transfer of business agreement. They are housed at the facility, which is Downtown Studios, and they do the work that is required to run the facility on a day-to-day basis. Now, the SPE, which is a Section 21, was established last year in July and became fully functional operational last year in July. The then Minister, Honorable Kanwana, established the board in May of 2010, and that board then set aside the structures so that we could function as the Downtown Music Hub to run both the facility and the building. Now, the NAC owns the facility, which is the building, and they own the studios and everything that is housed in there, but for all intents and purposes, on a practical level, everything is managed and run by the Downtown Music Hub, which is the Section 21. So there's the ownership aspect, and then there's the practicality of on a day-to-day basis of what happens with Downtown Music Hub. Downtown Music Hub is a Section 21 entity. The reason why a Section 21 entity was formed for the asset to be transferred to was because even with the amended Companies Act, Section 21s, or non-profit organizations as they're now known, are there for a social good. Their optics are there to meet a social good. So every single thing that they do, all resources that they earn are there to make sure that they meet the objectives, which is to meet a social good. So transferring the asset to this type of entity will ensure that even if this entity is dissolved at any point in time or anything goes awry, you are required by law to then transfer to an entity that has the same or similar object. So it would then stay with the purpose of meeting the needs of the music sector. That is why that entity was established in the form of a Section 21. You might ask the question, then how do the commercial entities fit into the picture? Section 21s are not precluded from having shareholding in commercial ventures. What they're precluded from is declaring dividends. So any money that is made does not go to the board or anybody else. Any money that is made goes to make sure that entity is running or that the objects are met. So what would then happen in the transfer was that the Downtown Music Hub would have to take full ownership of Downtown Studios and Fox Street properties, but anything that is made from them would then go to the object. And the objects obviously are defined in the founding documents of the company, which is the Memorandum of Association, the Articles of Association, which clearly stipulate what our objects are, and those that are already available to be looked at. So in terms of that, the asset would really stay with the sector, because Section 21 has a board of directors and it's got members, which are members derived from the music sector. And these would have to be organized formations in the music sector, not just any Jack and Jill coming to say, I'm part of the music sector, therefore I must benefit. You must be organized, you must be relevant, and you must be a recognized entity so that we understand who it is that's benefiting from the asset and what is derived from the asset. That is how, that is the envisionment of what will happen. Now in terms of what the rationale is, where we're looking at going, et cetera, et cetera, really, what the DAC wants to do is that they want to transform the music sector fundamentally, and that we want to ensure that this multi-billion dollar industry is being fully utilized, really being tapped into by South Africans, for South Africans. Because right now the money that is being made from this sector is being taken outside of the country. We want to ensure that this music hub takes full ownership of the music value chain from publishing to distribution, so that we can create jobs that stay here, money can stay in the country, we can contribute to the GDP, and it's all South African owned. So we're looking at setting up structures which will be set up by people in the sector and set up by investors, whatever the case may be, so that South Africans own these various means of production within the music sector. That is the general approach. But the overarching entity will be the Section 21. So forever in perpetuity, the assets and the heritage and the history will be owned and controlled by the Section 21 in partnership with the department and other government departments. That is where we're sitting with this. Now, in terms of the transfer process, because it is a transaction.
The CEO, you mustn't tell what you want to do or as well as you do. You must tell us what is your turnaround strategy towards it and what's the time frame towards it. We don't want to hear you will do that, you will do that, and what you see that.
Okay.
We want you to tell us what is the strategy and what is the time frame towards it.
Okay.
Because we don't want to next year we repeat again
okay.
The same thing.
So,
advisory panels that consist of experts within the various disciplines that apply their minds to applications and make recommendations to council on those. So they cover the seven art disciplines that the NAC deals with. They are multidiscipline theatre, visual arts, literature, dance, music and craft. So that for each of those disciplines there is an advisory panel. The question as to whether there's nepotism or space for it there, well, there's a public call for nominations. So the call for these panels goes out nationally, and people are nominated. Council then applies its united minds, I suppose, to the applications and determines who will sit on those advisory panels. And in doing so, one looks at provincial spread, demographics in terms of race, gender, and age, and then decisions are made as to who will sit on those committees. At the moment, each of those committees is chaired by a councillor, a council member. So I chair the visual arts panel, for example, and obviously report on the recommendations of that panel. The advisory panels look at project applications for funding. They look at applications for international bursaries, for postgraduate bursaries, and also obviously within their disciplines, and also undergraduate bursaries are allocated to institutions. They apply as institutions for block funding and then administer that funding themselves. So that is also looked at. I think that covers that. Thank you.
Chairperson, the grant management system and the question of how doing Western Cape and KZN will be answered by Ms. Julie De Kopa.
Grants management system, Chairperson, and then I'll do. The issue of the grants management system, what we have currently at the NAC is a paper-based process whereby people fill in application forms, it goes to another person who evaluates it and look at whether these people have all those necessary documentation. It goes to the people who are dealing now specifically with specific art discipline, who would then summarize those application forms and then for the panel to make decision on the merit of application. So it is not computerized, it is not efficient in a way because of it is a paper process. But with the new grants management system, it's a computerized system whereby now we are using electronic system where the application form will be fit into the system, and then all the necessary communication are done via the computer. Even the panel themselves will sit on the computer to make all those recommendations, and within the organization itself, the manager will be able to track where how far the application is and able to communicate with the stakeholders outside. When they inquire about the application, they will say that this application is at this stage and is about to be finalized, and it is when to come. In fact, even when the AG will audit us, we'll be able to see how efficient the organization is performing in terms of this grants management system.
Chair, through you. There was a question around the time frames to finalize the grant management system. Can you deal with that, please?
Chairperson of the board, can we just speed up the answer of the question? I think what you must do is must give the person who was dealing with certain questions analyze those cases so that we can speed up the process. Before the time is running out.
Before the end of the financial year, we are sure that the grant management system will be finalized. At this present stage, we are dealing with the testing of the grant management system, and we anticipate that the new funding session, which will commence somewhere in April, will be able to now use the new system into the funding system. So, end of the financial year is our target that we complete.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, the issue of equity in distribution of funding is really, really a pressing issue for the National Arts Council, also including other funding agencies. Because what we've been seeing is that perpetually, provinces such as Gauteng and the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal continue to receive a better slice of the cake as compared to other provinces. It's been a trend that we've seen since the inception of the NAC, and for us, we've got, you know, some answer or explanation to the whole situation, because firstly, we've seen that many active artists, historical, they move to the cities to look for work. A whole number of artists or art practicing individuals are concentrated in this metropolitan area. And in terms of numbers that come in when we advertise for funding, in terms of numbers, we see a lot of numbers from these provinces as well. In addition to that, is that the applications that even tend to get funding in terms of artistic merit and other things come from the same provinces. Hence, you see the funding skewed towards these provinces. Secondly, the numbers from the disadvantaged provinces are low. Applications that we receive from the Northern Cape, from the Free State, from the Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, are actually very, very low. Now, we've realized this, and what we're doing year in, year out, is to have road shows in these provinces. We consciously excluded Gauteng in terms of awareness. We've consciously excluded KZN and the Western Cape. However, in the KZN, we chose specific remote rural areas where we would even need a 4x4 tourist that area to run workshops on the NAC. Last year alone, in the Northern Cape, we went 4 times. We went to areas of DR, we went to Upington, we went to Kimberley, in order to ensure that we receive better numbers. Now, after roadshows, you see a lot of applications coming in from the provinces. However, we're still challenged in terms of compliance. We see big numbers coming in, but when you're going to assist through and shortlist applications, they still come short on compliance issues. And I suppose you can't go once and expect that things would be right. It's something that needs to be done continuously. This year, again, we went to the Northern Cape to, you know, make a follow-up, and we actually target, because we have a database of people in the airport, we target the applicants that were declined. When we invite, working with, we partner with Provincial Arts and Culture Council, they would organize the workshop for us. They will invite, but we also use our database to do the following people were detained for the following reasons. We want to go back and talk to them again. Thank you.
Okay, the next question was about the 75%, 25% allocation, how far we are on that. I will ask our CFO to respond to that. It's difficult for me to try and coordinate all of them and give them to the same person to answer the question. Applicants not able to write reports and therefore unable to get further funding, Julie? Can you handle that now, please? And then choice of universities to fund as well. And I think around the choice of universities, it is just that we gave an example of this, but perhaps our grants manager can tell us which other universities we are dealing with. Thank you.
In terms of how much we have dispersed with funding now, because we have 2 funding sessions, the first funding session was ready for project funding, which looked at organizations, individuals, and international businesses. So we have used significant portion of the budget in terms of allocation. I can safely say we have already allocated close to 80% of the funding that we have for this current financial year. We are currently looking at national bazaars that are starting next year, early next year. We are adjudicating them now. That actually takes a portion of about 20% to finish the allocation that we have for this current financial year. In terms of art training,
sorry, can you just explain us again that part? How much did you receive for the book in 2010-2011? And how much did you spend already? Because the book is closing next year. I mean, is it March? So we are left with them. You can't count December. We are left for 3 months. We are left. So we want to check how much we have left. How much was it for the 2011? How much did you spend, and how much did you left?
Okay, if I can just give you a picture of the NEC funding. We received 68 million this year. 75% of that is 51% of that goes to project funding as a whole, 15 million to orchestra, 22 million to company funding, and about 13 million to project funding. Now, of the project funding that I'm administering, the one that we ran this year, we've received 13 million, and each discipline gets about 1.9 million to disperse. From that 1.9 million, we split it into 80-20, 80% for project funding, 20% of that being budgetary funding. Now, project funding amounts to 1.5 million, which we have taken care of in the first funding session. Now, in this second funding session, we had a balance of about 382,000 per discipline to fund budgetary. So we are currently, as we speak, we have advertised for funding, we have received applications. Panels, advisory panels are currently sitting now to adjudicate the bursary. And at the end of November this month, the council would have approved the bursary, so we would have finished the allocation for this year in terms of project and bursary funding.
Just to add on to the 80%, usually these are just actual figures that we show. Usually at the end, towards the end of the year, like January and February, we use the whole 75% of what has been allocated to us. You'll find that on the annual report, the exact amount that we were given, we utilized all of it.
Chair, if I may continue, in terms of dealing with semi-literate or illiterate artists. We do have some people who cannot report to us, back to us. I can give an example. For instance, one of the arts development officers earlier this year went to Mpumalanga. There was a group of cultural women who have applied, were assisted to apply, got funding, but in terms of coming back to us, filling in the contract and telling us exactly how are they going to spend the funding. They were really, really clueless. So we sent somebody down there to sit with them and actually assist them in meeting the requirements of the application. With a lot of the crafters, we encourage them to keep the receipts because they cannot write financial statements. You see us with classical batches of receipts which will sit down and actually calculate how much they have spent. And many of them, we say, in as much as you can write a proper report, give us evidence of the work that you have done. You'll see them sending pictures, you'll see them sending DVDs of the work that they have done as evidence of the work that they have done. Even posters for the performances, they will submit them. And we see that as sufficient in terms of giving evidence as to work that was done on the ground.
Universities, Julie?
We support a wide range of universities in South Africa. Starting from University of Limpopo, the Nelson Mandela University. We have supported the Northwest University, West University, University of UJ, Tshwane Technology. It's a whole lot of them. We really do not pick and choose which ones we want to support, but we encourage students and institutions to apply directly. And in terms of looking at equity issues, universities that were previously marginalized actually are considering them when we disperse the funding to ensure that they receive a better share of the cake.
Thank you very much. There was a question around having the list of recipients for funding to be included in the next report. We have noted that. They decided the following people, perhaps from Limpopo, okay, you know, all the various provinces. I'm going to ask the chairperson of our Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Zama Bengu, to answer and try and answer all these questions at once. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bengu.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, members of the committee. I'll just start with the supply chain. I think one of the reasons we have quite a number of irregular expenditures is that in the office for some time we have not had a specialist in procurement, and as a result it happens from time to time that procedures are not followed properly. The plan that is in action at this point in time is to actually appoint a supply chain specialist that would make sure that we conform. The next one is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There's just two items there. The major one is 400 and something thousand that was paid to the CFO, because what happened is when he was fired after the hearing, he went to the CCMA. By then, the council had been dissolved. The CEO decided to pay cash to settle him. That is what happened. The other amount was what she paid for the cost that were incurred for the vacant CFO position that ended up not being filled at the time. The bulk of the irregular expenditure was at the time when there was no council. The minister was looking one at the time. She did give the CEO permission to act as council also, but there was a specific proviso that for any decisions that she would take in her capacity as also the accounting office, as accounting authority, she would have to consult the department, and that did not happen. That is why a lot of these transactions that took place when there was no council became irregular.
What's the next one? Could you
the CFO dismissal. The former CEO was employed around July 2009, and then by November same year, she reported to the audit committee that there were irreconcilable differences between the two of them. By February 2010, she had instituted charges and suspended the CFO without informing counsel up front. We were all taken by surprise that the CFO had been suspended. And then the disciplinary process took place. Council decided that, at the time, council decided not to fire him, but the process was sent to the minister. The minister reviewed the council decision and decided the CEO needed to be fired. He was fired. He went to the CC. Come on. When he got the letter that he was fired, he went to the CCMA. By then, there was no counsel, and the CFO just paid him 410,000 or so to settle the matter.
The last part, you didn't hear properly. You didn't catch properly the last part.
Which part?
The one you say the counsel, there was no counsel or what?
Oh, yeah. You see, what happened is the decision to fire him was taken with the minister around August 2010. And then in September, the council was dissolved. In the meantime, the former CFO had gone to the CCMA. So around October, November, there was no council. CEO was also acting in that capacity. She decided on her own without consulting the minister to settle the matter by cash.
Yeah, so
I'm sorry,
I want to follow up on this. So this is a matter that the new appointed board must take that matter forward.
Yes, that particular transaction is also part of the matter that is going into the forensic exercise.
And will be part of the package of the 23rd of November?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. The interim forensic report, which also includes this issue, will be presented to Council on the 23rd of November. Council then needs to give management the mandate to say, now we do the proper forensic. And then after that, we take appropriate action.
Thank you very you can't be a referee and a player.
Yes.
So
the complexity of an institution sometimes do warrant the board or the council to have a commission. So depending on the number of meetings, that will then be the situation. You refer to the person who was earning 99,000. She happened to be the chairperson. She's not on the same scale as other members.
I just want to interrupt. I know that our time is limited, but I would like the NAC to indicate to us on paper the new councillors that in or the new board, and with regard to legislation, you know, the number of meetings, and we would also like to have a breakdown of each councillor serving on whatever other committee. Yes, please. And then, because I mean, Jefferson, I'm looking for savings. I'm looking for savings that one can make. I understand people work very hard and all of that, but we can't have, some work and others don't. For instance, what did you do? What was done for the people that only attended one meeting? Because there's legislation that says after 3 meetings, you know, you should go. So I just want us to understand with the new council now that things run smoothly, that we are updated. Give us, as per person, I'm not going to repeat myself. It is going to be important that we know specific on which of the other relevant committees these people serve. Okay. Then we don't have to actually go into this question any further.
Just to add to that, the one observation on one thing that I also wanted to bring to your attention as well is the structure of the council on page 21. And you're sitting with a council of 22 members. That's one of the biggest councils I've ever served in. It's made up of members that have been appointed by the minister, and then you have provincial representatives. So I'm just bringing to your attention how complex the structure can be.
Okay. Deputy Chair, it is on page 21 on Duncan, but it didn't explain. I'm sorry, I think it didn't. People interview that you don't know what position the person actually had. So maybe there can be just explain what is the portfolio that those people so that we know. If you speak to a person, what the person dealing with, yeah.
Ex-CEO, she left voluntarily on her own. She was not dismissed. She resigned, and she moved to one of the sister companies or state-owned entities. She has moved to Market Theatre. Meaning of black. No, she resigned. She resigned, and it was also part of the terms of her resignation that we've been talking about the forensic audit, to say, should she be found to have contract in the PFMA or be implicated in the irregular expenditures that we've referred to, we will then still follow her. So that forms part of her resignation terms.
Yeah, although the AG, maybe he's careful to say things. We want tomorrow to turn again this entity. The way he put it, he said, a leader every time.
Thank you, Chair. there was also a question around what is our definition of black, and I think we use the term as it is used in South Africa. We're talking about African colors and nation when we put black in our report. Thank you, Chair. I think the Deputy Chair has dealt with all his questions. Julie, you've done this week, eh?
Yeah.
Because there was a question around the 14 million, the 7 million allocation.
But sorry, because of the point Honorable Johnson was made, we don't saw the structure of this entity, so that we can come to the point on page 23, how did you come up with the 65% on the issue of employment equity? Because we are also to check, is that 65% also touch on the issue of people with disabilities?
Can we then, Chair, make an undertaking that when we send in the response around the structure of the council and the various subcommittees, we will then give an employment equity report. We will also do an organogram. But also we've noted that when we do the next report, annual report, we will include those, even if we include them as supplements as a content of the report. Thank you.
Yes, I just want to add also, you know, it's very difficult, no, not difficult, to think that we have to interrogate a financial year that is gone. You know, it's time bounding. Because we have a future budget already, you know, in it. So whatever this aggregated data can be given to us to have a clearer understanding will make our questioning as members of Parliament more focused on the issues and the challenges that our institutions face. Instead of still, you know, grappling with who is who and things like that. So please try to assist us in that regard. Thank you.
Sure, the next question was around how the NAC helps with resources for historically disadvantaged people in order to give access to the arts, and what resources are we talking about. I think that, and also also how do we promote national and international liaison? I think I will ask our acting CEO to respond to that, but also to draw the House's attention to the fact that we have not done our step plan as new council. And the reason why we did not do that was because we are appointing a new CEO, so we did not want to bring somebody on board and say to them, there is our strategic plan. So we put that on hold. And as soon as we have appointed our CEO, we will then sit and go through the structure with the new person. But I will ask our, because now we're talking about 2010, 2011.
Thank you, Chair. With the issue of how do you promote national and international relations. This partly is done through the Department of Agriculture. Because the Department of Agriculture is responsible for international relations. One program that has been done with the Norwegian partnership was called MINO, and it has been with the NAC for over 6 years, whereby various programs of MINO of music were supported. But also there was an international exchange in terms of the artists from South Africa going to Norway to do workshops with the Norwegian musicians, but also some expats from Norway, they will come to South Africa to do some kind of programs with them, and also joint performance. That's one way. We anticipate that there will be a Swedish program, which we are working in terms of resuscitating it, coming back to the NAC, because of it was formerly with the Department of Agriculture. It will then, with the ongoing discussions with the Department of Arts and Culture, we will bring the program back to the National Arts Council. But also the National Arts Council is a member of IFACA, International Federation of Arts and Culture Council. In 2009, we hosted the World Summit on Arts and Culture. and I think around 40 countries came to South Africa to participate in that fourth World Summit on Arts and Culture. And currently, it was in Melbourne, which I attended with Professor Tobin. And I think there are more initiatives with regard to that. The issue is challenged. We are consistently approached by various embassies to support the artists to come to certain countries to assist to perform during the Red Calendar Days, your Freedom Day, Heritage Day. The challenge is of course, funding, but I think we are working through it. Through the strategy, we look at ways on how we can actually ensure that we push that forward. And there was an issue of a very difficult question. What way you foster the expression of national identity? You know, our primary responsibility at the NAC, and I say it's challenging because of we do fund, we don't actually initiate programming most because of the act, it says 75% of our budget should be used by way of funding. But this is our assumption, and I'm saying assumption because then it is the way that how we look at the arts evolving on the ground. That the more you fund a community-based arts organization or you fund a traditional or indigenous arts form, like you fund your craft, you fund your tatami and all that. That's how you foster national identity on the ground, that you preserve that art form and the people become more proud of wearing your traditional regalia and all those things. So these are the assumptions that we've made as the NAC to ensure that that aspect of the act is being upheld. And then the issue of how would council would assist with the disadvantaged communities. I think it has also been covered by the grants manager. The issue that we go into communities, even the rural communities, to do workshops with the communities to assist them in actually filling application forms so that they are able to access funding, but also assisting them in terms of reporting back to the National Arts Council. And these are the strategic interventions that we make in order for them to access funding.
Thank you. Chair, there was a question around why we only have 8 provinces' provincial representatives. The one province that does not have a former provincial representative is the Northwest. And we have got a council member who is informally representing the Northwest. But we are aware that we need to enhance our relationships with the various provinces, and that will be part of our strategic plan. And hopefully going forward, we will work with DAC, because then the NEC will then be brought on board in a better way. Not that we're not working with them right now, but it can always be better.
One of our special subcommittees is also a provincial committee with representatives from each province that will deal with specifically with provincial issues like that.
Yeah, I saw it on page 21. The members who present the provincial presenter. About chairperson of the board, if you go into on the issue of your strategy process or as a friend, when you appoint the CEO, I think it will be important maybe before that time that we must get in the president of Northwest so that you all the provinces be accommodated in that process. I mean, it must be fair and square so that there must not be shortcomings when you're discussing your strategy plan, because the partner strategy plan is for 5 years, and all the entities in this plan must be towards that. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. That is noted. There was a question around the surplus, and I think it was Honourable Member Magunda who said, explain the surplus in literal terms. I'm going to ask our, and that question came up, came again under rollovers of money committed versus supplied. So I'm going to ask our CFO to respond to that.
When you look at 2010, 11 supplier, I need to also go on page 81 on our annual report. This was sort of operational.
Can you
finish
this off the line?
There was an interest received for, you know, investing money of about 3.6 million. We did also receive about 84,000 from Mino. And also we were renting, we had, you know, what we call rental income, which we had a fence issue within our building. We were, you know, getting rental income on a monthly basis, which was at about 350,000. And also standing income of areas where we did receive that money. So when we look at the overall surplus for that year, was more related to the interest income and also sundry income and rental income. It has got nothing to do with you know, grant income that maybe we were not utilizing the money effectively. You know, that's why we had to invest that money. It was actually, you know, we have been utilizing our investment profile. That's why we have received the interest income.
Yeah, I just want to add that what we see sometimes as surplus in our financial statements is not in reality change that comes from the operation. It's just the accounting treatment of the grant system. Because AGS said we only treat a grant as an expense once the client has met all conditions and you are ready to pay. In other words, we see a surplus, but the money itself has been committed already to client.
Not what I'm trying to find out is it the AG is the one that discovered this, and then for that matter, I was trying to find out if it's like that. You explain to the AG. The AG will speak to the what will I say? We would like you to comply with the legislation. That wants you to do exactly what you say. Even if you can explain, the AG's report will always continue to say you are here for the supplier. You can convince me now as a person, but in terms of the legislation, you will not be able to get the right thing. So that is what I'm saying. Be it an interest, the grant or whatever, the left of us will remain surplus. That's why I was talking about the literal meaning for understanding. You know, technically, you work with money all the time, financial people, you know what you are dealing with. So, but literally, it will remain a surplus all the time, as long as you do not comply with the legislation. I was just saying that.
Chairperson?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the questions that I had noted, I think we have answered all of them, unless if there's any that we have left out. But I noted that some of them were answered collectively. Like downtown came up there, and there, but I think we had a thorough explanation of that. So with that, Chair, I think we have, I hope, answered all the questions.
Honourable members, I didn't take note of each and everyone's question. Are you fine? If you wanted to follow up, I will allow this process. But I, for the first round, are you satisfied?
Well, you were talking about making a follow up. But it's actually not a follow up. You know, mine is to refer, if you may allow me, just to the question that has to do with fostering the impression of a national identity, which I'm satisfied in terms of having received the answer, you know, from the, but the only part that he is working is talking about, you know, assumption, and we can't find anything on assumption because, you know, the NGOs and so on. I think we need to just do away with that. And we need to make sure that, you know, you find, we want to be made to understand that you find something that you saw, not an assumption.
I think the last part is just a straightforward and a marching order. Tapana?
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. My question, I forgot, but we don't have time. What I want to find out is, did the service providers that were given money irregularly, did they perform the task that they were paid for? Okay, another question is, I don't think there's anybody who doubts the importance of the downtown studios, but I hope we have benchmarked it for its workability, because it has a facility first. Let me leave other questions, because I'm getting time on everything.
Yeah, I also looked to my watch. I supposed to be in a meeting. Honorable Sun, you want to read? And then Honorable Duncan.
Actually, it's going to be brief. I don't know if I'm repeating to this one or it's right. I talked to other people. I'm checking the issue, the whole issue of the issue. And I think it must be taken very seriously. Because in the past, I didn't come long ago, very long ago, to join this particular team. I was in HCC. But I'm saying it's very important to work on your decision. Because in the past, we couldn't move because of them. And although people may think relationships are not important, to me it's very important. You cannot move. Because if you need to have working relationships, you don't have to be friends. If you are employed together, but you have to be able to work together. And I've noted that the task was like missing, and we didn't talk to it because there's no way we can return and talk about this. My advice is that it's very important that we take the culture of this country forward. We need to do that while the relationships are in balance. Perhaps we must come up with a code of conduct that enforces that relationship. Like, it must not become a flame in the thing.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make two positive contributions for the NAC to please ensure that with regard to the supply chain management, I think it is irresponsible in the absence of a supply chain specialist that other officials would, you know, not know how to handle money. You know, that is what it tells me. Without the specialist, we're going to, irregular expenditure is going to occur. So please, please just be guarded against that, because it brings another kind of picture, a negative picture, about the NAC not knowing how to handle the money. The second thing that I just wish to highlight, to since our DG is here, it is going to be the responsibility of the minister, DG, and yourself, to ensure that when entities are given property or land, that it is monitored properly by the department. And ensuring that what has happened to downtown will not happen in future. And yes, there are, again, the legislation that guides this. You are right, the Cultural Institution Act do give the minister the right to make available any land or property to entities. However, it is going to be important for the minister and the department to ensure that they see that process well dealt with. Thank you very much.
Can we deal with the question on the service providers?
In the last three questions, four questions, this will be the last, and then I want to wrap up the meeting.
So it's service providers, whether they did perform the services that you paid them for, sustainability of downtown.
It's coming, it costs them $8.
Okay.
Just to leave
but Honorable Duncan, you made the issue, yes, you made a comment on few things. But on the issue of the supply chain, I think we must be telling this meeting when will be that in place, because the book year of 2011 and 2012 is not far. And then we start next year the same problem of supply chain oil procurement. So we must hear in this meeting, and the DG's here represent the department, we must have an oversight role to play to make sure with the board when will this be in place, that we're not starting next year again on the issue of supply chain. Thank you very much.
Chair, on the issue of supply chain, our target is to latest 1st of April 2012 to have a home body in the position. The reason we can't do it immediately is budgetary constraints and also the formalities of changing the structure, the organogram of the organization formally and advertising the job, etc.
I'm not accepting that answer. You didn't hear what taxpayers' money. And if there is a silence on that, we will sit with the children. I think on the 23rd, chairperson of the board dealing with this matter, and the DG is also here, he observed what I asked, respond on this. I'm not expecting it. If somebody can take funds and something money, and now you can, maybe because it's partly constrained, you can fulfill this duty. No, I don't accept it. And in the report of the department, the most of the places were saying capacity, budget constraints. And yesterday I presented the budget review report in the parliament. No, I'm not accepting that answer. I think the board is appointed to play the duty. Look in the matter on the 23rd of November. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We've noted that. I think with comments, Honourable Member, have we dealt with your question?
Yes, they did perform the work. Is that the you know what you call presidential procurement policy framework act? On our annual report, it does reflect that there was a translation.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've answered the last round of questions.
I must say thank you very much for National Arts Council to come to present the annual report to the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture. Also want to thank the DG for this team to come also to observe on the issues of the National Arts Council. And also thank you very much members for the participation, but also for the patience we have, because it is our duty. It's already past year. But it seems that the time is very short, is because there's still critical issues that we want to raise. But the time is our challenge. So I think all the things that we raised in this meeting today on a serious note, and then I hope that you capture it. At the board, I think the board is now found for 3 months or 6 months. For 6 months, yeah. So I hope and I trust that this board will not resign or leave us in the desert. I think that, the board was taking those issues forward. You are, because if an entity is without the board, then this thing is happening yet, because there's no leadership. And then you operate in a vacuum. So, thank you very much, ma'am, for that you're going out to the rural area. That's the type of thing that we will see. The people say we must bring parliament to the people. And I think it's not only just sitting in the offices, it's to go out and reach out to the poorest of the poor. And those who can't come, maybe to the tech to come to drink water. But on the issue of those people, for the efforts we do, those people not, who cannot comply with the legislation, you must check with the provinces, how can they assist, even in the local municipalities, how can they assist this entity to make sure that maybe membership, people who monitor those shortcomings and past the shortcomings, so that we can make sure that people can do things by themselves, empowering themselves, because you can't do whatever they do keeping. Somebody of those group maybe can written right. So some of those group can be trained to do bookkeeping, or even basic bookkeeping, because you can't do it forever for them. This is not empowering. Lastly, as soon as this entity will have the strategy in place, or the spread plan in place, please come to present to us as a committee, so that we can also be aware what are you saying, how will you take this entity forward or turn around it, as opposed to be played the role it's supposed to play according to the constitution. Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson and your board. We want to see after the 23rd of November if the advert is out on the advertisement of your acting of your vacancy of the CFO and the CEO, because that is the two very important functions of our organization. So, because I'm not just undermining two of you, but I always say acting for me is not sometimes a good thing, because you're just acting, tomorrow you'll be away. So it's better if you have a permanent people that you can put strictly comfortable for, or an account for what is happening maybe in your structure, in your organization. So we are seeing out, yes, you're saying, Chairperson, you will deal with that on the 23rd of November. But also, members, next year is a very tough year for us, because we're dealing with the language bill. But next year, I think we want to come to see if the Caribbean is really moving, and Chairperson make the commitment that they will take this entity forward, and the DG, what the department takes this entity forward. And also, I was still trying on the point, why is this CS Festival in Cape Town, if you have a legacy center somewhere. And why? Spending a lot of money in this CS Festival, not even our poor people can come to afford to attending this CS Festival. So those are the things that we will fast track next year. I think I was saying to the minister after the house yesterday, yes, you are the new leader in this